36. On Parnassos, 15 years ago. Now this story Siv told me takes place a few years before all the others, when Phasma and Keldo were both children. Keldo still had both his legs and was the warrior in the family, and Phasma was not yet the fighter and leader we know today, although Keldo was training her. They weren't even part of the Skyr group yet. They lived with a much smaller, weaker family group, and their only territory was directly around the Nautilus, which was considered a great prize. Keldo told Siv that his mother and father were getting older and weaker, along with his aunts and uncles. A younger cousin was too small yet to contribute. As you saw in the earlier stories of Parnassos, it was becoming a land hostile to anyone who wasn't in top shape and ready to fight at a moment's notice. In their family, Keldo and Phasma were forced to rise to the occasion. Around this time, life went from unbearable to nearly impossible. The small goats died out, and the already stinging rain turned to acid that burned uncovered skin, and everyone's ribs began to show through their clothes. Their diet shrank to mollusks and sea vegetables. Teeth began to loosen. Wounds started to fester, and they learned that if they didn't amputate and cauterize, even the smallest scratch from the rocks would induce the dreaded fever. They were exhausted, their skin pallid and their hair falling out. They'd never heard of detraxers. The family group had lost half their members in the last year alone, and despite being children, Phasma and Keldo were their only hope. It was all they could do to defend the Nautilus from the Skyr and Claw raids, and even then much of their strength came from weapons passed down through the generations, sharp bits of metal, and one blaster that only occasionally worked. As the raiding intensified, it became clear that the Skyr were losing their patience and wanted the Nautilus. Phasma and Keldo had to sleep in shifts, so that one of them was always awake and ready to fight off any forays from older, battle-hardened Skyr folk. Balder stole their small cousin for the Clawfolk, and the raids took on a new terror. They lost ground every day until there was practically nothing, and Skyr scouts could be seen always watching from the edges of their territory, like vultures circling a limping Eopi. Keldo argued with their parents over how to handle the encroaching raiders. It was obvious their group couldn't last, but the older generation refused to give up their ancestral home, much less share it with vindictive invaders who wouldn't honor it.
"You'd rather die than share?"
Keldo asked his father one night, as they sat around the fire that burned in the center of the Nautilus.
"At least then I wouldn't be here to bear witness to the desecration," his father said. "Better to leave our dying world than see some other man sitting on this throne."
"You're no king," Keldo said. "You can't even fight anymore."
For that, his father slapped him. Although the man wasn't as fit as he'd once been, it left a mark.
"I understand,"
the boy said, and he climbed up out of the Nautilus to take his watch and relieve Phasma. But when he crawled out onto the stone above, he didn't see his sister anywhere.
"Phasma!"
he called, scanning the area. Back then, stone tiers marked the border between their territory and the Skyr, but Phasma was nowhere to be found. He walked to the edge of the cliffs and looked down, but all he saw was the dark and roiling sea, the progenitor of all his troubles. Perhaps his sister had flung herself out into that great beyond, eager to be done with the cruel world, as Keldo sometimes longed to do. But no, Phasma most likely had never considered such a thing.
"What are you doing, brother?"
she asked, appearing behind him like smoke with the blaster in hand.
"Looking for you. Where were you?"
She ignored the question. They didn't wear masks yet, and the moon was full, so he was able to see into her eyes. And she was able to see the handprint on his cheek, which only made her face go harder.
"What has he done?"
she said, and it wasn't much of a question.
"Father won't compromise," he said. "Not with the Skyr, and not with anyone. He'd rather die than lose the Nautilus."
"And what do you think?"
"I think I'd rather stay alive than die for something that's already halfway dead."
She put her hand on his shoulder, clamping down.
"Are you sure?"
she asked.
"Sure about what?"
She didn't answer, just nodded decisively. Before he could question her further, she whipped out her small stone knife and buried it in the muscle of his calf, deep enough to hit bone.
Keldo screamed and went down, and Phasma guided him to the rough stone with a strange gentleness, lest he slip off the cliff into the sea.
"You'll understand later," she told him as she yanked out the blade. "But know that it had to happen this way, and I'm sorry."
Keldo was going into shock, and he could only mumble,
"Why, Phasma? Why?"
She stood and dragged him toward the hole that led down into the Nautilus. When he was close enough to look down into the cave, she pushed him into it with no warning.
"Help!" she screamed. "We're under attack!"
Keldo landed hard and looked up from the ground of the cave far below. Several masked faces appeared around Phasma, but they weren't fighting her, and she wasn't attacking them. They were waiting for something.
"Don't go,"
Keldo mumbled to the rest of his family, on the verge of blacking out.
"She's..."
The last thing he saw was his small, tired, feeble family taking up their weapons, their blades and axes and clubs, and clambering up out of the Nautilus to fight the Skyre. When Keldo woke up, he was still in the Nautilus, but he was laid out at the foot of the throne, nestled in his father's blankets. Phasma sat beside him, dressed in leathers as the Skyre did, holding out soup. The sound of talking, laughing, and footsteps echoed around him, and as his vision came back into focus, he saw dozens of people, more people than he'd ever seen in one place in his life, happily lounging and cooking and eating around the Nautilus.
"What happened?"
he asked, because for all that he remembered plenty, none of it made sense.
"We were attacked," Phasma said, "by the Skyre. Mother and father and all the rest are gone."
She watched him strangely, like a hawk hunting for some small and telling movement.
"But you stabbed me. My leg."
He scrambled to sit up and look down, but his father's blanket was spread out over him. He realized that he couldn't quite feel his foot, and when he whipped back the blanket, he found he'd lost most of his leg. The stump was coated in a thick green salve that smelled of the sea.
"No, Keldo. The Skyre did that. They caught you on watch, and I threw you into the Nautilus. I saved your life. We are lucky that they've invited us to stay here, to live among them. All we must do is agree to join them in good faith, to fight for them and contribute. And then we can stay here in the Nautilus. It will still be ours. What say you?"
Keldo knew she was lying. He remembered her apology on the cliff and the bite of her knife. And he understood in that moment that she had, in one fell swoop, rendered him alive but incapable of fighting her while securing the Nautilus for them both. All along, Keldo had argued that they should join the Skyre, but his father had disagreed. Now Keldo realized that Phasma saw things the same way he did, but her method of saving both their lives and keeping their cave had been decisive, dastardly, and unyielding. And he knew that he now had only two choices. Join the Skyre with her, or die. A brawny fighter came to stand behind Phasma, a tall man Keldo had never met but who looked like a leader forged in battle.
"Brother, this is Egil, and he is the leader of the Skyre. He is a good and fair man, and he will use the Nautilus for the benefit of his people. For the benefit of our people."
"Now tell me, Keldo,"
Egil asked, a hand on his blade.
"Will you join us, or will you join them?"
"Join whom?"
Egil stood back and pointed to six bodies laid out neatly along the wall, each wrapped in the fine fabrics they'd carefully hoarded in the Nautilus, filmy gray and too silky to ever use for clothes. Blooms of red shone through the gray, and Keldo didn't have to see their faces to know who they were or how they'd died. Two of them had machines stuck into their thighs, like strange unwanted growths, and a dark-skinned Skyre woman squatted beside one, her teen daughter by her side with a basket full of water skins and dried plants. Keldo went cold, and he later told Siv that he could feel the chill spread down to the toes that were no longer part of his body. He looked up at Phasma, his jaw dropped and his eyes pleading with her to tell him that he wasn't seeing what he was seeing.
"What are they doing? To mother and father? To our family?"
"Those are detractors,"
Ijil explained gently.
They recover vital nutrients from the fallen. Vela and her daughter, Siv, use this essence to make a salve that prevents disease, and another that heals wounds. The liniment on your leg has saved your life, and this is where it comes from.
He turned away and shouted,
Siv, bring a tin of salve, the fresh one.
The teen girl picked up an ancient tin that had been sitting beside the largest wrapped shape, which Keldo recognized as his father. She stood gracefully and walked across the Nautilus as if she'd always lived there. Her eyes flicked curiously over Keldo, and she smiled shyly as she held the open tin out to Ijil.
Will you fight for the Skyer?
Ijil asked Phasma.
Proudly,
she answered. The leader drew his broad thumb through the dark green salve and swiped a wet slash under each of Phasma's eyes. Everyone in the Skyer had always worn such stripes, and Keldo's family had assumed it was to make them look more ferocious during battle. Now Keldo understood its true function. It made them strong enough to fight.
Welcome to the Skyer, Phasma,
Ijil said with great solemnity.
Body to body, dust to dust.
Phasma bowed her head.
Body to body, dust to dust,
she repeated. But before Ijil could repeat the ritual with Keldo, Phasma took the tin from the girl called Siv and dipped her fingers in. Without asking Keldo the question, she drew the slashes on his face.
Body to body, dust to dust, she said.
But Keldo didn't repeat the phrase at first. And, of course, he couldn't have answered the same question. Without his leg, he couldn't fight for the Skyer, could he? Phasma had seen to that. Ijil's hand landed on the dagger on his belt, and the Nautilus went quiet as they waited for Keldo's oath.
You have to say it,
Siv whispered, her eyes wide and worried. The salve was cold and thick on Keldo's cheeks, a dark line hovering at the edge of his vision. It smelled of the sea, of death, of darkness. At least it didn't carry the scent of his father, for all that it was drawn over the same cheek the man had slapped what felt like years ago, when Keldo had been whole and his family had still been intact. He looked into Phasma's hard blue eyes and tried to remember what she'd looked like without the green paint, before he had seen her true face. He couldn't remember.
Say it,
she demanded. He had no choice. Ijil and Phasma had made that plain.
Body to body, dust to dust,
he murmured. Ijil clapped him on the back and smiled.
Welcome to the Skyer.